Self-serve, stress-free, seriously gorgeous. Design help available by appointment.
For generations, we've been with our customers through every season of life, helping families, ranchers, and businesses thrive. Hi, this is Melanie Jacobs with First Northern Bank of Wyoming. From local lending to personalized service, we're proud to be your community bank and trusted partner. Whether you're opening your first account, growing your business, or buying your dream home, we're here for you. First Northern Bank of Wyoming, proudly serving Wyoming since 1885. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 402576.
I'm Caitlin Brown with the John B. Kendrick FFA. We invite you to the annual FFA Alumni Barn Bash fundraiser, Saturday, February 21st at the Sheridan County Fairgrounds Exhibit Hall. Event sponsors include the Wyoming Eye Surgeons and Standish Family Fund. Doors open at 5:30. Tickets are just $35 at the door. The night includes dinner, live and silent auction items, and dancing with the Wyoming Sandal Tramps. Band sponsored by Sheridan Community Federal Credit Union. Proceeds fund local FFA scholarships in agriculture education. Media sponsors include Heartland Kubota, Truebilt Builders, PEMF Wellness, Sheridan Media and Range, the annual Albert J. Goodwater FFA Alumni Barn Bash, Saturday, February 21st. More information available on our Facebook page, Sheridan FFA Alumni. Again, that's February 21st at 5:30. See you there.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, February 18th. From the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we're joined by Sheridan Police Department Chief Travis Koltiska and Captain Tom Ringley. Good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Floyd.
Morning, Floyd.
Now, how are things down at the department, Chief? Everyone doing okay with this, I guess we could call it a lack of winter?
Yeah. Well, that's about to change tonight, apparently, so we'll see how tomorrow morning. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. Quick reminder, everybody, slow down when there's snow on the road. That will be tomorrow morning and tonight. So, no, things are good down there. So
that's fantastic.
Anytime there's warmer weather, calls for service do increase a little bit, minus the accidents, of course. So that we've been very busy. People are out and about. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, things are going well.
At least the weather keeps us out. Gosh, you know, I was talking to my wife the other day, and I said, here it is, like, February 15th, and we have both doors open.
Yeah, yeah.
Just took me by surprise.
Took my son to Three Pools to ride his dirt bike the other day, and it was packed with people.
Wow.
On a Sunday in February.
I bet snowmobilers are a little upset. All right, now, with limited interactions among the majority of the population, many people probably have little to no idea of how the police department is actually organized. So that's what we're going to discuss this morning. And my first question is, why is having a clear, defined organizational structure important for how the Sheridan Police Department operates on a day-to-day basis?
So, you know, the canned answer is basically it enhances operational efficiency. It ensures that you know, there's unity of command, meaning expectations and roles and responsibilities are clearly delineated and clearly outlined. And that not only from a command structure, but even all the way down through the ranks, you know, you're at the delineation of authority and knowing who's responsible for what in the organization can be more clearly outlined that way. And it improves communication is one of the bigger things too. We know, you know, we have to communicate effectively, whether that's to expand upon operational goals and objectives, whether that's, you know, to talk about mission, vision, and values, you know, having that open lines of communication and understanding where that delineation and where that where those responsibilities fall is basically the best. With any in law enforcement, we're a paramilitary, they call it a paramilitary structure, right? Most people are what we were talking about it offline and off air just a little bit ago. Some people have a general understanding of military command structure. Police agencies fall under what they call a paramilitary. It's not truly the same organizational structure, but very similar to that. A lot of terms are similar, and it's all about communication and delineation of duties and authority.
And when somebody joins a paramilitary, operation, and they learn rank and structure, they know who to answer to right off the bat. That's kind of, you know, it's a real generalization of why it's there, but that's why it's there.
It's also, they know who to go to learn from and to get the guidance that they need to develop throughout their career as well. So, you know, Captain and I have, through our growth through the organization, have always had people in positions that, as we started moving up through the ranks, that we answered to, we sought guidance to. There's also, as we elevated our ranks, then people started coming to us with the same thing. So it's just passing that institutional knowledge along and having greater impact on the directions of the organization.
Now, there's actually bureaus within the department and broad roles that they serve. Captain, what are the bureaus and what are the duties of those within?
There are three bureaus. The first is the Administrative Services Bureau, which I hate that name because it's mine. and it means I'm an
administrator?
Yes. but I am fortunate enough to work with wonderful people. I work with the records division, Kat and Jerome in the records division, Nate in the evidence bureau, and also the two lieutenants. But generally, we're responsible for department records, evidence and property management, all of the special projects, whether it's obtaining property through grants or building projects, policy development and managing projects in general, actually the facility projects, keeping up our building, which was built in 1982, takes a lot of time. And what that does is it frees up the Patrol Operations Bureau and the Special Operations Bureau up to do their job. So we try to take all of the admin duties away from the lieutenants so they can focus on being us. That's where us being a police department really comes in, is it that level.
And he just picked up fleet management, and that's a huge, know, we have to have a very robust and active fleet, one that's having a car that's reliable to get to a call for service. Mm-hmm. So that, and also just got picked up by the admin bureau. So all that fleet management, that, and there's a lot to just buy in one patrol car, all the stuff that goes along with that.
Absolutely.
And once again, it lends to efficiency. We meet with the two lieutenants and the administrative service coordinator every morning at 9. That way we can get stuff taken care of right there and then. We don't wait for like a monthly meeting or anything. Then we have the Patrol Operations Bureau, which most people would be familiar with because those are the actual police officers on the street.
That's our front line, right?
Yes.
There.
And also our dispatchers. As we discussed before, dispatchers are assigned to patrol teams. And that's the bulk of our police work. And then thirdly, we have the Special Operations Bureau. And that consists of Lieutenant James Hill, our detectives, school resource officers, and community service officers. And they do the special investigations and some of the, and any other enforcement that's not related to patrol.
So it's CSOs would fall under that special operations?
Yes, and we actually, it's not Lieutenant Hill anymore. It's Lieutenant Keller. They switched. they just switched.
Very recently.
We rotate duties every 2 to 3 years.
Oh, really?
If we have people in assigned slots. So they just switched January 1st. So after they both had very successful terms in their previous bureaus, now they're switching. A lot of it is to give them a fresh perspective, give their bureaus a little bit of a change in leadership, and also it enhances overall development. So one day they should be sitting in our chairs. Those are the three bureaus. And then the Special Operations Bureau has some other duties, like if all complaints are investigated by the Special Operations Bureau. They also conduct one of the most important functions at the department, which is pre-employment background investigations. So they really are very rigorous in determining whether or not a candidate for a job, whether it's police officer, animal control officer, any admin positions or community service officers are appropriate to work with us.
When it comes to information dissemination, sending it up, getting it back, is there a big meeting once a month where you, or probably more frequently, where you bring those lieutenants?
No, a monthly waiting to hold something for a monthly meeting that is a day to day objective is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We meet daily, and then we, with the chief and I and the lieutenants and admin, meet weekly. But and those weekly meetings are status meetings, project status meetings, or just where are we on this building project? Where are we on this fleet project? And also if there are any major concerns that haven't been introduced yet. And then, so we also have updates on the previous major concerns. So it's really kind of a big project introduction meeting, whether the project is community-based or physically based, and where we stand on those projects.
Now, when it comes to public outreach, does that fall under special operations, or is that something that you and the chief handle exclusively?
We may identify the opportunities for it, but we let people take the reins.
So
on anyone who want to, say, for instance, with the scam presentations at the senior center that Officer Schaefer does upon request, or anywhere else for that matter, we saw the need for that, but Officer Schaefer, we didn't delegate it to her. She took the reins and ran with it, and she's done a fantastic job. So the officers have the freedom at the street level to identify needs and opportunities to take advantage of community outreach.
Oh, that is great. So,
but if stuff comes to us, right? If an individual comes to us requesting an officer to be present for, whether it's one other one we do quite often is like presentations to banks on security, right? And responses to potential emergency situations that occur. They oftentimes we'll just call the administrative line. It gets passed up to me or the captain, and then we were like, okay, and then we let the patrol operations lieutenant know, hey, this has been requested. They will need to take care of it. They will ask if there's another member of the department that would like to present that to the bank. You know, so public outreach is, we encourage everyone in the department to be responsive in that. When it comes to just interactions with the public, now the PIO position, the public information officer, falls under the captain, right? And that's he is the main point of contact with media outlets and sources. So they're kind of two different things, but you know, just community relations, community policing, that's everyone's responsibility, mm-hmm. from me down all the way.
I think that's fantastic. That way, if an officer out on the street happens to see an issue, hey, I'm not seeing a lot of bike helmets. Can I make a presentation?
Absolutely.
In some schools or anything like that? They could bring that to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, again, going back to organizational structure, we encourage them to talk to your sergeant, talk to your corporal. And if they know, the sergeants and corporals have the autonomy, and the patrol lieutenant has the autonomy to say, yeah, hey, we're doing this. This was identified as a good informational campaign that would be really good to improve safety in our community. I've authorized the officer to come in and do some talks at the schools or talks at the YMCA or wherever regarding, bike safety.
Yeah. Sometimes we don't even know. One of the things I think we've gotten a lot better about is we're not trying to collect PR public relations tokens. It's like the public outreach achieves an objective. So we often do it, but we don't publicize it.
Yeah.
An example is Shop with the Cop. That's public outreach, but we're doing it for the kids we're shopping with and us, and we might have a picture on social media of it thanking donors.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we really do a good job. We're not here for popularity. We're here to develop relationships so people feel comfortable calling us, and also to serve all segments of our population.
And you've said that in the past.
Yeah.
It's not a popularity contest.
No.
I'm here to police
yes.
the area. And as long as that objective is achieved, good to go.
Yes.
When it comes to the fleet management, there was a side duty that I had to do for a little while within the military where I had to manage a civilian vehicle fleet. It was a handful. When it comes to your fleet, there are computers, radios, radar, special equipment that is within these things that requires quite a bit of maintenance. Who are the team that take care of that?
Well, the officers obviously take care of the operator level maintenance, if you remember that term from the military. They're responsible for making sure they get the scheduled maintenance, such as oil change, tire rotation, new tires.
PMCs.
Even to the point to where sergeants will conduct random inspections of vehicles for safety. But in regards to managing the fleet, you know, we can't give enough credit to Heather Saplinski at City Hall in Public Works. She does the bulk of the work in acquiring resources, from putting out vehicle bids, collecting all the, you know, the systems in a police car, the radar system, the camera system, the radio system, the seats, the wow. cages, barriers in the back seat. She does a fantastic job. My role is more monitoring stuff once we get it. Our threshold for a vehicle is roughly 8 years or 80,000 miles. And we don't wait till we have 10 vehicles at that threshold, because we're not going to buy 10 at once. So we have a rotation schedule. Another thing that people sometimes don't take into account into that number is the amount of hours they're running. We can't turn our patrol vehicles off every time we get out of them, like on a traffic stop or in the winter when we're stationary monitoring the flow of traffic, or even at a call. They accumulate a lot of hours, which is tougher on an engine than actually moving is, if it's sitting there idling, especially with the Dodges. The old Dodge Chargers had lift issues with the oil. So that's our fleet management in a nutshell. Also, our vehicles are often the first reflection of the community as a whole. So we're not going to have damaged and shoddy looking vehicles. You know, I kind of go broken windows theory on them. You know, for crime, it's take care of the small things so that small crimes don't become big crimes. We take care of the small issues on a vehicle. Even if it's a small dent, we get it fixed so it doesn't become a bigger one. Mm-hmm. But having said that, you know, a new vehicle is roughly $75,000. Wow. Equipped with a new Dodge Durango with all of the systems in it is roughly $75,000.
Now, I could imagine that there's only certain companies, or maybe even Dodge or these larger vehicle companies, make various vehicles specifically for law enforcement.
Some,
or is that a thing?
Some of your major manufacturers, I mean, you can, Chrysler, GM, Ford will all make a version of what they call a police vehicle. Dodge calls them police pursuit vehicles, and they call them interceptors. Fords call them interceptors. I'm not sure what the brand for the Chevy or GMC is, but they do come, but they're on limited production lines, right? I mean, to build a Dodge Durango for our needs, because they usually have an increased alternator capacity, some of the wiring harnesses that are required, the electronics in these cars that we require in those cars now, these cars are insane. It's just, it looks like a cobweb in there with wires sometimes. But they only run these production lines at certain times. And so you have to get on a bid list basically to get your hands on these cars.
Everybody's wanting.
Yeah. And because they have to shut down their normal production line to increase capacity for this, they don't have a separate plant just for police vehicles. And so when we put these out for bid, we spec them out, to, you know, what we're looking for, making sure that it's a police ready vehicle. That doesn't mean it doesn't come with everything we need. Then we have to have an upfitter. And an upfitter is somebody who specializes in installation of police emergency equipment, to include consoles, radar, camera system, barriers, extra storage area, and then bring all these wires together in a harness and make sure that your emergency can power up, your PA can power up, that your siren can power up. So that's and this all takes time. From the time our budget's approved, takes effect July 1, we usually try to order in the first couple weeks of July. We did that with the last three vehicles that were approved on our last budget. They are still sitting in our upfitter in Livingston, Montana. We haven't seen them yet.
Oh, wow.
We ordered them in the middle of July. We have not seen them yet. Probably won't see them until April.
Because guess who else is ordering vehicles the first week in July?
Everyone else.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the upfitters get a massive shipment of cars and then they just go to work.
Yep.
And it could be almost a year before. before you see
It has been a year before in the past. That's almost a year before we get them from the time we order them.
I imagine once you get into that rotation, though, it's not too bad. You just know I'm not going to get it for a year, so I need this vehicle to last one more year.
We know, but we still chomp at the bit to get them because I mean, we're running a couple of vehicles right now that are 11, 12 years old. And when they get older like that, they start developing some serious maintenance problems, and it becomes more expensive to maintain them.
We just decommissioned a 2014 Tahoe and a 2015 Charger. That were in use very recently, but they're not appropriate for police operations. So what we're going to do with those for the first time is we should put them up for auction.
Oh wow!
Locally, but there are companies that will just buy them with everything. We take out the radios and the radars, but we'll just take them for a lot more than we get at auction, and they upfit them and sell them or refurbish them and sell them to law enforcement agencies, wherever. So once again, Heather at City Hall has done a public notice process, soliciting bids for them. It's not like the trucks or whatever we may or may not drive to work, that work okay. The patrol cars need to be close to 100%.
Absolutely. And the funds that are then raised from these auctions or by selling them to other companies rotate right back into the fleet management system?
They just go to the general fund for the city.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it just goes right back to the city itself.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. On that, I think I'm going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more with the Sheridan Police Department right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Ever wonder where your bank's priorities really are?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, they're right here at home.
No shareholders, just shared values.
Local decision-making, community support, and a long-standing commitment to the people we serve.
Plus the convenience of online and mobile banking.
Banking that matches your values.
First Federal Bank and Trust. More than a bank, a mutual bank. Member FDIC.
America is at an inflection point. This is President Trump's last term. It's our last chance to save America. With these high stakes, Wyoming can't give our congressional seat to another rhino. Liz Cheney sold us out. She is the face of betrayal. Never again. Reed Raisner will represent the beating heart of the America First movement. Reed Raisner will have President Trump's back. Always.
I'm Reed Raisner. In Wyoming, our word is our bond. So let me tell you where I stand. Our Second Amendment is sacred. God gave us the right to defend our families. Border security is national security. I'm ready to fight alongside President Trump to deport criminal illegal aliens. And like you, I know politicians spend too much damn money. I'll keep Washington out of your pockets. I approve this message because America First means keeping your word.
Paid for by Reed Raisner for Wyoming.
Your car does a lot for you, getting you to work, hauling kids, driving in Wyoming weather. So when it needs service, trust the experts at Midas. Midas repairs brakes, battery, exhaust, steering, air conditioner, radiator, suspension, starters, charging system, fluids, tires. Midas does it all, and they do it right. Right now, the savings are strong. Buy one oil change, get one free to use by March. Plus, save $100 on a set of four tires. For full service auto repair, see Midas Tire and Auto in Sheridan. A touch above the rest.
When it comes to orthopedic care, experience matters. At Sheridan Orthopedic Associates, our team of board-certified specialists brings decades of trusted expertise to every diagnosis, treatment, surgery, and recovery plan. From sports injuries to joint replacements, Sheridan Orthopedics offers both surgical and non-surgical care tailored to your needs right here in your community. Choose the team that physicians and families have trusted for generations. Learn more about our team of experts at SheridanOrtho.com. Sheridan Orthopedics, expertise you can count on.
Think your pet has star power? Prove it in Pet Selfies. Snap a selfie of your pet or include yourself in the shot for extra fun. You can enter once a day, so every pet in the house gets a chance to shine. presented by Mandy Koltiska with Century 21 BHJ Realty, and she's giving away $200 in chamber bucks to one lucky winner by random draw. Enter now through February 26th at SheridanMedia.com. Pet selfies, cute, chaotic, and totally worth it.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting, and this morning we're speaking with Sheridan Police Department Chief Travis Koltiska and Captain Tom Ringley on organizational structure. Now, in regards to policing, organizational structure is critical for ensuring efficiency, accountability, and responsiveness to the community's needs. This provides a clear chain of command and defining operational roles. In the first part of the show, we discussed how and why the Sheridan Police Department consists of three different bureaus: the Administrative Services Bureau, the Patrol Operations Bureau, and the Special Operations Bureau. Now, when we look at who typically works within the Special Operations Bureau, there was a lot of different, branches underneath that. Could you just repeat those for folks one more time? Because I feel like the Special Operations Bureau are really more of what the general population is going to see outside of our officers patrolling.
So, yeah, so primary in the Special Operations is what we call CID, or Criminal Investigation Division, detectives. So they're the ones that are responsible for investigating felony and violent crime. Some of the higher end investigations are going to take a longer period of time to complete from start to finish, primarily, right? That there's a lot of follow up that's required. We like to have our patrol officers; they can handle smaller investigations because their primary responsibility is visibility, being out there in the community, being seen, deterring crime. So when it comes to investigations that are going to take an extended period of time, that's when our Criminal Investigations Division comes into play. Another bureau or another division within that is our school resource officers. They're the ones that are the visible ones at the schools. Right now we have one. We're going to hope we'd like to add two more as staffing allows for it, to have SROs housed in the junior high, the high school, and at Sheridan College.
Don't mean to interrupt, sir, no. But when it comes to an SRO, that is an extra duty that I absolutely admire. That isn't a job that somebody switches out often, is it? I mean, you have to develop a rapport and a relationship.
Yeah, so, and that can be accomplished and shared in sometimes shorter order than in other places just because of the size of our community. And it's all about the personality you put in there as well. Like Megan Phillips is in that role right now. She's awesome. And she's developed those relationships very, very quickly. She's grew up here, families here. So it's easier in a town like ours. But traditionally, we've had SROs in schools as long as 5 and 6 years. Oftentimes it is something we like to rotate out and give. Again, it's all about fresh ideas and fresh perspectives. But it's all personality based, right? And that's why we test for these positions. We don't just say you're going here. Mm. You know, it's like who's interested, who has that demeanor, who has the desire to do that and to do it effectively and efficiently. And for the right reason. So that's kind of how we operate at the Sheridan Police Department. There is some change involved in that.
And one of the reasons we rotate is the school resource officers are there to be police officers. They're not there to enforce school district to policy, which sometimes when we leave people in a position long, they forget that they don't forget. And it's perfectly natural, but they tend to veer towards seeing themselves as an employee, even if it's detective. Mm-hmm. We rotate detectives. They see themselves only as a detective, but at our root core, we're all police officers.
Almost like, again, and please forgive me for kind of linking the two, but it's from what I know. No matter what your duty is in the U.S. military, you are a rifleman first.
Yes.
First and foremost, you are a police officer on the street.
Yeah, and, given that, we constantly talk about the character of the people we hire, we're comfortable inserting any officer we have mm-hmm. if we had to into a school resource officer position, if we had to. But we want to make sure we can almost guarantee the right fit and that the candidate would enjoy it too. So it's a good system. All the school districts and the college have been fantastic in working with us. And not only have they helped us select school resource officers in the past on oral boards, but also assist in their development as well.
You know, I can still remember my DARE officer from 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admired that trooper. He was a really great guy. And friendly as anything, but like looking back on it, he always maintained his composure.
And I think our, you know, there's a stereotypical school resource officer nationwide, and it may not be the most flattering, but you're not going to find one either in the city or Sheridan County for that matter, hiding behind a pillar during a critical incident. We have a huge amount of respect for the deputies or the school resource officers too. They will handle something if it comes up in the school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, when it comes to our detectives, that is a position that every single police officer, patrolman, can work their way up to. That isn't something where you need a various degree or certification beforehand, correct?
That's correct. You know, going into that, obviously having, it's something that doesn't happen early in your career. It's there's usually you're going to be spending several years in patrol before you're going to be considered that for that position, because you need to have a good foundation of general police, general policing, right? Have that understanding, and then we will provide any additional training that would be necessary, whether it's a through more formal and more complex investigation, interview, or interrogation techniques, specialized investigations from Corporal Krenke is our child forensic interviewer. She specializes in child forensic interviews for victims of crimes against children, and then providing those trainings on those types of investigations. We provide that to them, and because that's part of their development. And what we really see is really cool is when somebody rotates out of detectives and they go back to patrol, it just enhances their patrol ability so much on their day-to-day activities on the street, and helps also them develop. It almost always seems like come out of detectives, they get promoted. And then their development of the rest of our staff, it's a trickle-down development effect. So it works really good to our advantage in that respect.
They're able to share their knowledge
absolutely.
With their fellow patrolmen. Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely amazing. Kind of training the trainer once again. And then by the time another patrol officer wants to step into that position, they can remember what they learned on the street. I think that's great. Is there anything else about organizational structure, rank structure that you would like to add before I let
you
go?
Sure. If someone would like to join our organization structure as a police officer or a dispatcher or a community service officer, contact us at the Sheridan Police Department. I think I can speak for both of us. We've really both personally and professionally benefited from the rank structure, and you know, not this position wise, but in step by step as we learn the job. I think sometimes I probably downplay it a little bit too much, but there is a lot to learn, and part of the benefit of that structure is you learn one step, you learn how to be a police officer, then you learn how to be a corporal, some basic leadership, then sergeant leadership, and a little bit of administration. Then you get up to lieutenant and above, then it's a lot of administration, but you've learned what you're actually leading and administering for.
So it's ready for the job.
Yeah, it's a good structure for organizational development.
I couldn't have said it any better myself.
All right. Chief, Captain, thank you both for coming in this morning. It's always a pleasure seeing you two.
Thanks, Floyd.
All right. When we return, we're going to speak with the mayor of Buffalo, Mr. Shane Schrader. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 9 FM. Sheridan.
Here's what makes First Federal Bank and Trust different.
No shareholders, just shared values and profits that are reinvested locally, supporting nonprofits to help our community thrive.
Mutual means more for our communities.
With years of trusted local service and modern banking tools that make life easier, Mutual means more.
First Federal Bank and Trust, banking with shared values. Member FDIC.
Talking with Bill from Tales of the City, one of the big reasons to choose Tales of the City is food for your pets.
We have the first whole food pet food, and that's nature's logic. It has no synthetic vitamins, no synthetic minerals, no vitamin mineral packs from China. You get your iron from spinach. You got a raw element in that food, a higher meat content. It gives 18 different amino acids. That's one of the best.
Get nature's logic for your pet at Tales of the City, 218 West Burkett.
Branded with quality, Shipton's Big R.
When you think boots, think Ariat. When you think horses, think Ariat. When you think of a $100 Ariat purchase, think of receiving a $20 Shipton's Big R gift card. When you think of cowboys and cowgirls, think Ariat. When you spend $100 on Ariat, Shipton's Big R will turn over a $20 gift card to you. For premium Western and lifestyle products, Ariat is the best choice. At Shipton's Big R, you can choose from comfortable and stylish Ariat footwear, Ariat denim that fits and feels right, shirts, tops, caps, and outerwear. When you think of hard work, think Ariat. When you think of going out of the town, think Ariat. This $20 Shipton's Big R gift card from Ariat is available right now through Sunday at Shipton's Big R on Sugarland Drive in Sheridan. Shipton's Big R.
Every love story is different, and the perfect gift should be too. At Legacy Diamond and Gems, you'll find a stunning selection of gemstones and fine jewelry for men and women to match your style, personality, and budget. From colorful gemstones to classic favorites, we'll help you find what's meaningful to you. Find us online at LegacyDiamondGems.com and visit our store at 11 North Main in downtown Sheridan. Legacy Diamond and Gems, jewelry as unique as the one you love.
A great meal that benefits a great cause. The Knights of Columbus Lenten Fish Fry Dinner, 4:30 to 7 p.m. this Friday, February 20th at 301 East Brundage in Sheridan. Tickets are $15 a person or $75 for a family of five or more. Kids five and under are free. Dine in or take out. And this week's proceeds benefit the Legacy Pregnancy Center. For shut-in delivery, call 672-0936. The Knights of Columbus Fish Fry Dinner this Friday at Rodolini Hall, where the Knights of Columbus meet.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. For a second part this morning, we are joined by the mayor of Buffalo, Mr. Shane Schrader. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good. A little chillier than normal, but hey, it's February. Right?
I know.
We'll take it, I guess.
I was speaking with the SPD chief and captain just before I spoke with you, and I said that on the 15th, this weekend, the wife and I had both doors wide open to cool the house off just a little bit. I'm really, really shocked at the weather right now.
We'll take it. It'll be interesting, but we'll take it. Right.
How are things out in the sportsman's paradise, sir?
They are wonderful. They're always wonderful here. They're good. You know, everybody seems to be happy, a little concerned about maybe fire season coming up, but they're good.
Have those discussions been had yet, or is there any kind of overwhelming concern on fire season that you and maybe some of the commissioners or other city council members have discussed?
There's been lots of discussion this year. You know, in a previous life, I was on county fire, so you know you start to get concerned about the snowpack and the lack thereof up on the mountain, and you hope you get a wet spring, and then you hope you don't get a wet spring because it's going to make more fuel. So it's the vicious cycle of fire season.
Absolutely. And speaking of being out and about, you recently spent some time in Cheyenne observing the legislature. Sir, was there anything there that really stood out? And you know what? I won't even stick with legislature. Just go into the Capitol. Anything really stick out to you on your trip?
Well, yeah, you know, it's budget session this time, so they have, 21 days to come up with a budget, or they have to go into a special session. And, you know, if you've been following the news, there's been some extra exciting things happening down there recently. So I hope they focus on the budget. And, yeah, there are some things that I was down there specifically to watch, and things are going as good as could be expected at the legislature. So
now, when it comes to being a representative of the city, has it always been very important to you to be present during the legislative session?
Yes, and you know, even if you don't have a chance to talk to all the representatives, they know who you are, and the ones that you get to talk to, they share the knowledge that they're, you know, not just me in the House, but, you know, usually WAM, the Wyoming Association of Municipalities, you know, kind of matches in with the legislature, and that's 99 communities speaking as a voice. So it's important to be down there, and you have to get in front of some people and talk about what your passions are and how it benefits not only our community, but Sherrod and Gillette, you know, all 99 communities in the state. How their decisions on the House floor and the Senate floor affect the local communities back home. So,
now when it comes to kind of sitting at those tables with other leaders of towns and cities within this state, was there any big funding conversations being had amongst everybody? Any concern amongst our local leadership?
Well, you know, the one that kind of always tops the list is direct distribution. And then, you know, the last couple of years, the property tax has ranked up there with direct distribution. So, you know, those all directly affect back home. You know, the decisions made in Cheyenne affect everything north of there. So northeast and west of Cheyenne. So, you know, direct distribution, you know, if you go back in history a little bit, that was a system set up to replace when they took off the grocery tax. So how do you backfill that? And they came up with direct distribution, and it's been modeled and remodeled over a few years. And, you know, Councilman Mike Madden here in Buffalo was the state representative for quite some time. And you hear them talk about the Madden formula, and he came up with a Madden formula to ensure that the lower income, smaller communities get a little bit bigger slice of the pie to help them along the way versus the larger communities getting all the big chunk of it. So,
and have you had further discussions with Mr. Madden on that? You know, when it comes to, I can remember sitting down with him for extended periods of time. The amount of knowledge that man has is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's always a topic of conversation, and then it kind of quiets down a little bit, and pretty soon the legislature's back, and you know, we kind of have to give Mike a little rib jab every once in a while that they're going to be talking about him again, whether he's in the room or not, because it's the Madden formula.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not sure how he came up with it. He's an economist and, you know, was a professor of economy. And so he knows this stuff like the back of his hand, the number crunching. And I'm not that number person. So
I never was.
I kind of have to glaze over when he starts talking about it and go, but yeah, we talk about it quite often and how the formula came about and, you know,
now
start talking about, is there time to tweak things? So
when it comes to specific budget items, is there anything that you yourself are really watching this year?
The direct distribution, which, you know, passed the House, and now it'll go over to the Senate. That's a big one. A lot of our smaller communities have to have that direct distribution to keep going. That's a big portion of their annual appropriations. Of course, you know, the property tax, you know, reductions in property tax unfortunately means less money coming back to the counties and the communities, and those are the dollars that fund your fire departments and, you know, your special districts, your cemetery districts, and that type of thing. So we watch closely on that. And then there's just, you know, a lot of other bills that come through that, you know, may not indirectly touch local communities, but can it take away some local control? Yes, absolutely, they can. And so we watch those. And of course, another big one that's rearing up is, you know, the gaming stuff. So we watch that because that's dollars in, but, you know, with gaming, it can also be dollars out if you're not careful. So you have to watch those things to see how they're played out and how each individual bill is worded.
Is there any kind of routine that you follow, sir? Do you jump up the next morning and kind of look to see what passed, what didn't, or do you just look online as the day goes through?
You know, I kind of monitor the bills that I'm primarily interested in. There's so many other bills that affect me and or don't affect me that I don't pay too much attention to. But where I'm going to say we have a really good advantage is, you know, we have Bill Novotny, who is on top of that stuff. Just about every bill that's getting, you know, in front of the legislature, and he monitors pretty much all of them and, you know, tracks back and makes sure that we're all in the loop. If it's a bill that we're not watching closely but could affect us, he makes sure that we know that information as well. So hats off to Commissioner Novotny for being our legislative liaison, if you will, from Johnson County and Buffalo down.
He's extremely knowledgeable about that kind of stuff, and
he is.
He really does stay on top of it, doesn't he?
Yeah, like, I don't think he sleeps during the legislature.
I don't think he does either. switching gears on you real quick, sir. The Buffalo Chamber of Commerce recently spoke to the city council about the Winter Gala, something a little more lighthearted than the former conversation. Mm-hmm. But what role does that event play for the community?
Well, you know, it's an awards ceremony, and it's the best of awards gala. So it's just the people of Buffalo and Johnson County recognizing their businesses and, you know, ranking them and grading them and, you know, giving everybody a pat on the back. So it's a thank you and a really good fundraiser for the chamber. So I like it. I like that it's getting brought back and we're acknowledging and appreciating the businesses that are going here in town. So.
How does the city typically partner with the Chamber of Commerce on community events?
Well, you know, there's a small financial portion that's in there, but you know, we partner with them in being able to close down streets if that's what needs. You know, police department is there for them, public works, garbage, you know, blocking off the streets. So we're there to support. We're support for the chamber, and we're happy to be a supportive member of the chamber. So,
now switching gears on you once again, Johnson County Travel and Tourism recently gave you an update. What were some of the highlights that stuck out from that to you?
Well, you know, some of the highlights are, you know, they had a documentary on the hole in the wall down in KC, that, you know, short film. So that'll be, you know, they'll be doing a premiere of that here coming up. And just, you can look at how tourism is tracking for Buffalo and Johnson County. And, you know, with that, you get to be able to plan and make arrangements and, you know, what do we need to do if there's whatever else going on and how do you work it? So we kind of know what markets that they're hitting, you know, what our rooms occupied are versus rooms available in the hotel, and, you know, how are they selling the product that's us?
Yeah.
So that's really good. And they're doing a phenomenal job at it. They just seem to keep getting better every time they come in front of us. There's, you know, just improvements and strides forward. So hats off to Toby and crew down at Johnson County Tourism.
Now, of course, with Longmire Days, a lot of folks come into town once a year, really kind of pour in from all over the world due to that fandom. But tourism is also an extremely important component for both Johnson County and Buffalo. You have the ability to sell a very unique, truly Western town. So how important is that the funding component for the city when it comes to that?
Well, it's huge. It's, you know, it's one of the three legs on the stool of success. You got agriculture, you know, minerals and tourism. And, you know, tourism is more than, you know, mom and dad and the kids going to Yellowstone. That rolls into the hunting seasons and the ski seasons and, you know, just I want to spend a couple of days in a quiet town, you know, where Owen Winster wrote The Virginian and Craig Johnson wrote Longmire. You know, it's, you can take a little step back in time and just enjoy yourself and walk the trail systems. And so it's huge because, you know, they're going to eat in our restaurants. They're going to spend money in the hotels. They're going to buy a souvenir or two or sodas and candy bars for the kids. So it's a big revenue source, but it's also just keeping us on the map. And, you know, the best form of advertisement is word of mouth. So
absolutely. Well, sir, I've got to let you go. I want to thank you for calling in this morning. It's always a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope everything goes your way for legislature this year.
You know, it's going to go one way or the other. And yeah. Right now, it's leaning towards we're okay with the way things are going. So,
okay, that is.
If good you don't like it, you can always take it back in the next legislative session and get things changed. So,
run for office, right?
Yep, keep personal out of politics, and we'll all be happy and friends. So.
All right, thank you for calling in, sir. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
What if your bank actually shared your values?
That's the difference at First Federal Bank and Trust.
No outside shareholders, just shared values.
Just people banking with people and investing right back into our community.
Supporting local nonprofits.
Strengthening the place where we call home.
With local branches and convenient online and mobile banking.
Banking without shareholders.
You belong at First Federal Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
A bad bearing doesn't give warnings. It quits. If one seizes pulling your boat, you're parked on the shoulder, boat and all, till the wrecker comes. Dalton's RV in Sheridan is running a $50 per tire bearing pack, plus parts and tax. Boat trailers, utility trailers, flatbeds, RVs, and campers. Dalton's RV, Heartland Drive in Sheridan. Better to be fishing at the lake than waiting on a wrecker.
Okay, Punxsutawney Phil, you ain't nothing but a groundhog lying all the time. I took your word for it and didn't bother having my 4x4 tuned up by Hando Service Center and did it myself. Big mistake. So you, Fuzzy, are living proof that a feller can wake up, look around, and go right back to sleep and folks will still take you seriously. Honestly, you just may be my spirit animal. So wake up, don't listen to rodents, get that machine to Hando Service Center. No whiskers, no naps, no nonsense on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
It's been a long-standing tradition in our community. With four chapters in our county, the opportunities for young people continue to grow. See the center section in this week's Country Bounty to get caught up on our local FFA chapters, where they've been, what they have going on, and how you can be a part of their learning and growth. Sponsors include Heartland Kubota, True Built Builders, PEMF Wellness, Sheridan Media, and Range.